Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Well, again, welcome to Circles of Change here. It's a pleasure always to tap into the literary scene out there and have an opportunity also to speak with another talk show host. So Regina Brett from the Greater Cleveland area, welcome to Circles of Change.
Thanks for having me on the show.
It's great. Well, let me give a brief introduction. Regina has been a newspaper columnist for 16 years, 11 of those for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, where she was a finalist in 2008 and 2009 for the Pulitzer Prize in commentary. It was the day before Regina's 45th birthday that she wrote an article entitled 45 Lessons Life Taught Me, and that article ended up going viral, being emailed around the world, and ultimately manifested in her turning that into her first book, God Never Blinks, 50 Lessons for Life's Little Detours. This went on to become a New York Times bestseller, and it's been published, in fact, in 20 different countries. So now a frequent speaker at company and nonprofit events, Regina is also a live talk show host on the Cleveland NPR affiliate, WKSU, every Wednesday evening, hosting a potpourri of real-life informative conversations featuring guests from all walks of life. In fact, she calls it the internal affairs show as opposed to the public affairs show. Our topic today actually is Regina's second book that was just released here in early 2012 called Be the Miracle, 50 Lessons for Making the Impossible Possible. It's a collection of stories about the decisions we make and how our choices can make the impossible indeed possible. So congratulations, a second tour. Here you go, right?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on and talking about both books. You know, they're a bit different, and yet they're a bit the same. People, I think, need kind of like small nuggets of hope, and each book has kind of small chapters of inspirational stories about other people or things that I've discovered in my own life, and I think they're little jump starts to help you through the day.
Isn't that great? Well, did you ever think, though, Regina, that first article back there that you wrote after your 45th birthday would indeed go viral and take you on the book process?
You know, not at all. It's one of those columns that it kind of just wrote itself. Used to joke that I sleep in bed with journals next to me and pens, and that one I woke up and just started writing, and it flowed out of me, and I had typed it up, and, you know, my editor really wasn't that excited over it. He liked a little more hard journalism kind of things, and I thought, you know what, just run it anyway. And those 50 life lessons have just gone everywhere in the world, and people still reprint them and clip them and put them in the refrigerator magnets and all that. I think there's just such a universal hunger for something like that gives you a little hope to get through each day.
Well, your metaphor that God never blinks, of course, is the fact that we blink, and in that nanosecond, things in our life can change, right?
Right, and, you know, God sees the whole picture. You know, God doesn't blink and sees all those little things that maybe make those parts go together that look like just a lot of broken pieces to us.
Yeah. Well, back to the fact that you obviously, I mean, the email went out and started going all over the world, like you had said. It must have taken your breath away then, the reaction you started getting.
You know, it still amazes me that I get emails from all over the world, Malaysia, Mexico, Indonesia, and the first book, God Never Blinks, ended up in 20 countries. I'm just stunned at how much we're alike all over, no matter where you're at. The book came out in Japan, China, Korea, Poland. And to think that, you know, I grew up in a little town, Ravenna, Ohio, population 12,000, that the people who touch my life are touching the people's lives all over the world. Mm-hmm. That just is amazing to me.
Some of those 45 that you added five on then, the 50 life lessons, were there any some that got, you know, more resonated feedback from than others? Or was there a certain set, or did it kind of make a difference of the time of year even for some people?
You know, I think a lot of people could relate to the ones, I had written some about my cancer experience, I had breast cancer. It was in 1998 in February, so it's coming up on an anniversary.
Yeah.
And people can relate to that kind of feeling of powerlessness when you get diagnosed with cancer or something happens in your life that you weren't expecting and really didn't want. And so the few chapters where I mentioned that and kind of shared my journey, I think everybody felt like they could relate to that fear and that just that sense that, wow, what do I do next? And everything looks, the unknown looks so scary. And then you know, one of my favorite lessons in that first book was, when in doubt, just take the next right step. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's all you have the energy for or the insights for, and if you just take the one that you're sure of, then the next one is revealed, and then the next, and then the next. And pretty soon you're walking through the whole journey.
Yeah, in fact, that's that whole metaphor that I need to drive from California to New York. And, you know, let me not worry about the countless thousand miles in front of me, but let's just look with what I can see within the lights that my car is illuminating at night.
Well, yeah, and that's, I love that metaphor, because sometimes we think we need light for the whole journey, you know, to get from here to finishing my college degree, or to get from here to my kids graduating from high school and they're just, you know, 3 months old. You just need enough light for today, the task right in front of you or the person right in front of you. And we usually have what we need. We just don't always have what we want right then.
Mm-hmm. So, Regina, if I've got the timing sequence correct, then your first book, you were writing many of these articles and these life lessons at the time you were going through your journey with cancer. Is that correct?
You know, I wrote some of them going through cancer, some of them kind of reflecting years later.
Later, okay.
I've kept journals all along, so I have stacks and stacks of journals. I'm one of those people that, to me, writing is like breathing. I always have a pen with me. So I had taken notes, and even when I went to my chemotherapy appointments, I always kind of jotted down, you know, what was going on, and kind of like my own little journalist in my own life. So some of those things, I could just go back into the journal and kind of say, wow, remember what that was like? Oh, here I do. Here are the notes.
Well, you know, in fact, many people that, of course, those of us are in the coaching world or inspiring others like you do, that the first thing we encourage people to do is journal. And it isn't necessarily, you know, dear diary, today I had three coffees, but rather it's whatever is on top of mind, whatever articles impact you or radio shows that you take notes against. And before you know it, you start seeing patterns jumping out of the very things your subconscious in some ways is taking hold of. Isn't that right?
It is, and that's what's so great about keeping the journal is sometimes you can't see when you're in the midst of something how it all is really shaping up. But a month later, you can go back and skim that journal and say, oh, my gosh, this pattern keeps happening, whether it's good or bad. And that's sort of your compass. You know, if you're in a relationship and you keep telling yourself, well, it's really good, but then and you look in your journal and think, this has been heartbreak over mm-hmm. and over and over and over.
Right.
Well, then maybe they do something different. And I tend to be more honest in my journals than I am, like, just in my head. And so there's something about writing it down and then reflecting later, you know, kind of seeing, like you said, that pattern. You know, if you have a job that maybe you've been unhappy in or it just doesn't seem like the right fit, sometimes that journal can tell you what fits, what doesn't. You know, maybe it's not a new job, but a new attitude that you need, and you can see that when you look back at what you wrote.
Oh, I can so relate to that. Back in 2002, I could feel a major shift happening in my own professional life, and someone had recommended journaling, so I did. And, you know, it was snippets of quotes. It was an interaction I had with someone. It was a telephone number I might have written down. And lo and behold, in 2004, 2 years later, I did make a major move. And then my family and I moved across the country. So the journal and everything got put in boxes, and who knows where it ended up in the garage. Lo and behold, comes 2007, and I can feel another circle hitting me. And I said, you know, I started the journaling process. And then it struck me, I should go find that old journal. So I went on the archaeological dig in the garage. I found it, and I'm sure this has happened to you as well. I put the two books side by side, went back and reread what I'd written in 2002. I was writing some of the very same quotations, same messages to self. And I finally said, you know, maybe it's time I actually listened to what I was telling myself, you know, at that point 5 or 6 years prior.
That is so true. I think there's a part of us that really knows the answer and really knows what we need. It's sort of like being in touch with that intuitive self, whatever you want to call it. You know, some people call it the Holy Spirit, and they'll say just your best self, your inner self. I think sometimes we have that wisdom already in us. It just gets drowned out by the noise around us.
That's right.
And the journal, for me, is that quiet place to let that voice speak. And then it gets louder and louder and louder. And even you can even see it on my pages. Sometimes I'm writing in big, bold letters with exclamation points, like trying to yell to myself, you know, wake up, make a change.
I'm sure people can relate to that. Again, for those of you who just tuned in, we're speaking with Regina Brett, and she's a journalist with the Cleveland Plain Dealer. She also has her own radio talk show on an NPR affiliate outside of Cleveland, The Regina Brett Show, no surprise. So where does radio fit in the picture here, Regina? How long have you been on the air?
You know, I've been on the air at WKSU for about a year and a half. Before that, I was on in a Cleveland station, WCPN, for about 3 years, just a weekly show. But there's just something about radio. I love that you get to make that human connection. And
right.
It's so similar to writing. It's just faster, and you can't take it back like writing where you can think a little bit more. You know, I grew up in a big family with 11 children. I have 5 brothers and 5 sisters. So you learn to kind of speak your truth as fast and as clear as you can. So I think it trained me for radio and for writing.
That's a great point. In fact, my journey into radio, not unlike yours, kind of came as a sidelight. And I realized in my case that all the years of being in corporate America and pitching ideas, you know, having to interact with the media, you know, on the other side of the microphone. But I think probably, and I think the two of us are aligned in this, just this natural inquisitiveness that we have through to see the world through the eyes of other people.
Yes.
And
I think
so
it's true. Yeah.
And I would ask you now, you know, you've segued from one book now to your second book. This book really is much more, I feel in reading it, a call to action. So do something with what I'm now telling you. Was that the spirit of your kind of in background playing with these topics again?
Yeah, I think so. I think the first one was maybe more a little inner reflecting, and the second one was more about kind of taking that action. You know, some of the lessons, one of my favorites in Be the Miracle is magnify the good, lesson 4. And that came to me when I was interviewing a man who writes resumes for men who just got out of prison, for broken men, some of them who are homeless, can't find a job. And what he does is he just kind of looks at them and he tries to look at them sort of through the eyes of God or look through the eyes of good and say, okay, what have they done right? Did they mentor anybody in prison? Did they finish their GED, take a class? Yeah. And he collects all those pieces, puts them together, and writes a real resume, types it up, formats it the way anybody would want their resume. And when they walk out of his office, and it's all for free, they just feel like they have a new life, that they're somebody, and they matter. And that's the way he does his little miracle in the world.
And if I recall, what is his background again before he fell into this type of work? It was an interesting departure, I think.
You know, I think I can't remember. I have to look. Larry Petrus, I think he was a salesman.
Yeah.
It wasn't quite, you know, it wasn't in the work of writing resumes. And there's another gentleman, John Gulley, who retired and cuts hair for the homeless. He just sets up a little barber shop at the City Mission and never took any barber training, but he gives them a haircut. These are men who slept on the sidewalks, and he makes them feel like they're just as important as anybody else out there paying a barber to get a haircut.
And so I think that's, again, the title of your second book, of course, is Be a Miracle, 50 Lessons for Making the Impossible Possible. You certainly have featured people that have done small things that have grown to be extraordinary in terms of the field of view and impact on others. But I think your book really challenges us all, regardless of our age or stage of life, whatever our profession is, there's always something you can do to step up and help others do that in the process.
And some of them are really small. One of the lessons is simply arrive early. And people think, well, how can that be a miracle? But think of how it would change your life to arrive early. You know, if your marriage broke up and there's one person has to do visitation, imagine a child at the window waiting for that parent to arrive every weekend and waiting and waiting and waiting and growing up thinking they're really not important to mom or dad. If you arrive early before they're at the window, they're going to feel like they're the most important thing in your life. What a way to make somebody grow up feeling treasured. You know, on your way to work, to get there early, to be the one that makes the coffee or, you know, makes things kind of inviting for everybody else that shows up. You make a difference in people's lives by those simple things.
And, you know, those are life lessons that apply regardless of what phase we're in, if we ourselves are struggling with anything, to reach out and help others, which is certainly something that where the state of things are in our country, we could use some heavy doses of that on the positive side, can't we?
Oh, we sure can. And that's really, this book was inspired by some of the rough time that people are going through, you know, financially and just kind of like needing that hope when it comes to, you know, foreclosures and job loss and all that. What's great about this book is you don't have to make a lot of money to make a big difference. You don't have to have a lot of power in your job to make a difference. These are all stories of people that, you know, for lesson 1, start where you are, about a convenience store worker who saved the life of a child because she was paying attention at her job, and the child had been kidnapped, had been missing all night long. And the man who kidnapped the little girl brought her into a little Dairy Mart convenience store. And the worker looked at the picture of the paper and saw, oh, my gosh, that's the girl. Called the police, saved the child's life. Now, that convenience store worker could have been bored or not paying attention, like many of us at our jobs, wherever we are. But she was really, you know, made it a commitment to be there for her customers and save the life. So you never know what you're going to be called to do whether you're the mail carrier, the cab driver, the hairdresser, we're all important wherever we are.
Yeah, that's fair. The vignettes then for your second book, were these as a result of a series of articles, or is this a, you know, a compilation over time of now the stories you're presenting in your second collection?
You know, in Be the Miracle, some of them are from people I've met along the way as a columnist. Some are people I just sort of walked through my own life and thought, okay, who have been the miracles in my life? You know, one of them was in eighth grade, a woman who taught me to volunteer, and we helped a boy who was disabled. We had to kind of exercise his arms and legs because he couldn't sit or crawl or walk. And that lesson is don't quit before the miracle happens. And I used to go there every Saturday with, you know, I was probably 13, 14. And years later, I was volunteering somewhere else because that's what that taught me. And I saw that boy walking down the hall. And this is a boy who couldn't do anything when I was working with him. And I thought, oh, my gosh, they didn't quit. This is their miracle. And his mom told me when, as I wrote this book, I interviewed her, she said the miracle wasn't that her son ended up being able to walk, but that he had a social life because all of us came every week and volunteered. And I thought, I didn't realize I was their miracle. Like, you never know what you mean to somebody. She said it was such a joy to have children come to their home to be with Tommy and spend time with them.
And I think you're right. I think many times there are these tangential things going around, whether it be from our vantage point at work or what we do in our 5 to 9 life. There's a lot more touch and outreach that you can have if, like you say, just show up and be awake.
Yeah, really, just being present in the life you have.
Well, tell me about your journey. To complement this, of course, obviously the stories and vignettes you've caught up with doing talk radio. What's been some of your biggest surprises, Regina, being a talk show host?
You know, biggest surprises. Well, the show I do is live, so you never know what people are going to say
True.
When they call in, which I think is kind of fun. And so far, they've all been, you know, a spark of joy. I think that's the biggest surprise. The other surprise, though, about doing radio is I just love to give people a spotlight to kind of like let them shine. And I think sometimes in our lives, especially mine, I kind of want to be the one that shines. And I think I've learned that it's more fun to let others shine, you know?
Absolutely.
To let others get some glory and feel good and to spotlight people that are just doing great things or that want to share what they've been through in a way that might help others.
That's right. Now, Regina, I know you're also a mother, and you've also added to your cadre, then I would say, 2 more children, meaning your first book and your second book. And I've heard many authors say they went through the pregnancy, so to speak, gave birth to the book, but they had no idea what was on the other side of raising the child. Now, you've already raised this one child, your first book. Anything, any expectations you're setting yourself up for one way or another with regard to your second book now? What's the early indicators there?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because it is kind of like the second child, and part of me is like, I love that first one so much. And
yeah.
It's like, okay, I love this one too. I just have to get to know it. It's like, you know that first book so well, and the second one, it's like, okay, I've written it. Now I've got to like really kind of savor it and see what it does in the world. And it's just interesting to see the kind of emails I'm getting in response at book signings. And I love them both, and it's funny because the first one is this bright orange book, and I wasn't a big fan of orange, and the second one is sort of this beautiful kind of a Tiffany blue. It looks more like a gift. But they feel like they're 2 different gifts, and they're out there to do 2 different things, and I guess my job is to sort of release them, almost like you do with your children, and let them be however they're going to be for somebody else and touch people however they're going to touch somebody.
Mm-hmm. You're being an author and a talk show host now. How has that impacted back flipping around the type of journalism that you've been doing then with the Cleveland Plain Dealer?
You know, I think that I had to sort of pull my life all into one focus.
Okay.
Because sometimes a lot of us can do like so many different things that we have to say, what are we about? Like, who am I? You know, some people say, what's your brand? For me, it's really about what's my mission in life and does everything I do fit that mission? So I had to kind of re-sanctify my life and say, okay, is everything pointing toward that same mission? I feel like I'm here to really inspire others to be their best selves and to complete their life mission, whatever way I can help empower them to do that. And so the radio show, the columns of the Plain Dealer, the books, any talks I give out in public, I want them all to be that same compass point pointing toward how can I help inspire people to really help them live their best selves and be the person they're supposed to be in this life. So it's kind of polished and sharpened things for me.
That's nice, and continuing to polish and sharpen, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah, and who knows if it'll change a year from now. You know, the journey winds and dips.
The fact that your book has now been published in 20 countries, I have to imagine that really took your breath away when you kind of step back and realize the field of view that that book has had over time.
It's incredible. My publisher sent me copies of many of the books in different languages. I have a copy in Lithuanian and French, and two in Chinese, one in Japanese, one from Indonesia. And I love that each one has a different kind of cover, and you know, you see your words in a different language. And there's just such a beauty in that, you know, it's almost like music. I play piano, not very well. I just play for me, just for fun. Mm-hmm. And music is, they call it the universal language, because you can take a piece by Beethoven and anybody around the world can read music and play that exact same piece. And it's so beautiful to think that there's one language in music. And I feel like because words can be translated, that all these things that I wrote in my little experiences, my little life, they get to travel. They get to go everywhere. It's just such a joy.
That's nice. And the connections with people maybe who you knew in other phases of your life that have gotten reconnected with you? Was that some of the email, people that you had known a long time ago?
Oh, yeah. I mean, people that really were some of those blessings for me. The woman, Diane, who taught me to volunteer, and talking to Tommy's mom. I mean, gosh, I hadn't talked to her since I was 13 or 14.
Wow. Yeah.
And it was just amazing to have that adult me talking to this woman who probably wasn't very old at all, but to me she was like this older adult. She probably was 30. And, you know, I hear in emails and Facebook, Twitter, all those people from the life you've lived, all the different jobs you've held, and jobs that at the time I thought, I don't know what I'm doing here, I'm kind of lost. And yet each one shaped me, each one gave me some gift along the way. The whole cancer journey, what a bunch of gifts I got through that. Nothing I would have wanted, you know, to choose to get cancer, but boy, life takes you on a path, and the people you meet are just miracles.
Yeah, they play into that. Regina, as well, the opportunity you have to touch in and bring a variety of guests on your radio show, what's your primary source for your guests or your ideas?
You know, I'm one of those people that my problem isn't finding an idea. My problem is I have too many. My brain never stops churning out ideas. I have stacks of them, little tubs of them. I have drawers of them. I'm like an idea fountain. If I could make a living just selling ideas, I'd be rich. They're just everywhere. You know, there's so many people to write about, to have on the show. And so what I try to do, though, is each time I write a column or write for the book or have my show, I really try to I take some time and kind of pause and meditate and get quiet and just sort of, all right, what speaks to my heart the most?
It's exactly.
Sort of like I call it my little my passion meter. What makes the needle go boing? And that's what I want to do. That's the topic. That's the person.
And then that article is all that more easily to write, I'm sure. Well, Regina Brett, congratulations here on your second book. For our listeners, it's Be a Miracle, 50 Lessons for Making the Impossible Possible. In fact, her first book again, God Never Blinks, 50 Lessons for Life's Little Detours. Those of you that are there in the Midwest, of course, you can tap into the Cleveland NPR affiliate, WKSU out of Kent State, and listen every Wednesday evening to her show, The Regina Brett Show. Well, thanks a lot for contributing to Circle Change. We'll look forward to watching the progression of your latest venture. Regina, thanks so much.
Thanks so much. And you can also go to my website, reginabrett.com, if you want to read a few excerpts and kind of get a sample.
Excellent. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.